Life is supposed to be slower in rural areas. That's part of the reason that living there appeals to many of the residents. But slower life does not have to mean slower internet speeds. It often does, though. Efforts have been underway for years to ensure that the screaming fast internet speeds enjoyed by people in big cities are also available to people living scattered in the countryside. There is an economic and social rationale that goes beyond people playing games online or watching cat videos. Let's get up to date on efforts to speed up rural internet. Zachary Sakanik is a spokesperson for Connect Americans Now, a coalition of groups working to get better rural broadband. Hi, Zachary.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
And we also have with us Christopher Tamron, who's a telecommunications strategist with the Oregon Business Development Department. Hi, Christopher.
Good morning.
Zachary, let's start with you, though. The welcome page on your website is very effective. Talk about what that shows.
Well, the welcome page on our website, that's connectamericansnow.com. When you first bring it up, it builds the page very slowly. It has sort of pixelated images coming into clarity at the pace you would expect if you were back on the old school dial-up connection using a copper wire cable. And unfortunately, it's an important message because folks who set a lot of public policy and determine a lot of investments in rural broadband all have top high-speed internet service, and they've forgotten that maybe one in three Oregonians don't have access to affordable and reliable broadband. So for them, that's what the internet looks like.
And so that's one in three Oregonians you're talking about. How much of an issue is this still across the country? How many people are still dealing with slower internet speeds?
Sure. It's a huge issue, and I think you see that reflected in a lot of the rhetoric coming out of Washington. Folks are increasingly focused on rural broadband. That's because about 24 million Americans still don't have affordable and reliable high-speed internet. And of that number, about 19 million of those are in rural communities, and those are often in states like Oregon, where you have a lot of folks who live in places of the country that are a little more remote or a little more isolated or just not within spitting distance of a urban center where fiber optic cable is the norm.
Christopher Tamron at the Oregon Business Development Department, how much of Oregon still lacks broadband or at least affordable broadband?
Well, Oregon actually, as a big western state with a relatively small population, compares pretty well with other states. The FCC released a report in April, and Oregon was reported as having high-speed internet penetration for households above the national rates, Oregon having about an 84.9% penetration versus 81% nationwide. But it's not enough, and as Zach points out, the digital divide continues to exist, and I think it's one of the most important public policy challenges facing Oregon and the nation.
What particular challenges, geographic or otherwise, does Oregon present, Christopher?
Well, with telecommunications, you know, it's always been a population density challenge. As we move to areas of the state where we have low populations and the population is not dense, it's spread out. Those are high cost to serve areas. And then in addition to that, Oregon has other barriers such as mountains and large tracts of federal land.
All right, so some real obstacles there. We're talking about rural broadband in the state of Oregon. Christopher Tamron is a telecommunications strategist for the Oregon Business Development Department. Zachary Sakanik is a spokesperson for the national coalition Connect Americans Now. You can join us on the exchange. Your thoughts about rural broadband and its uses and desires for you. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So when we talk about the digital divide, Zachary Sakanik, I mean, what is the this is not just a rural issue, as I understand it. Is that right?
Absolutely. There are communities all across the country, millions of Americans who aren't in rural communities that still don't have it. And some places it's unaffordable because there aren't a variety of options in a competitive marketplace. But as we've been discussing, the biggest hurdle tends to be in rural areas where either you have geographic barriers that make it difficult to roll out new infrastructure, whether that's wired or wireless, or just because, as we've heard, the population density is too low. If you have 2 to 5 households per square mile. It's tough to, as an internet company, to say we're going to pay $30,000 a mile to roll out fiber optic cable from where we have it to where those households are. So you have to open up your toolbox and examine solutions, technological solutions that go beyond traditional infrastructure in order to bring down those costs and really make it worth it to connect those households that are a little further out there. Of course, satellite connectivity is particularly effective if you have, say, 2 households per square mile or in a mountainous region. But the problem with that is it does tend to be a little more expensive, and it can have a high latency because you're still bouncing a signal from the ground up to space and back.
Oh, right. 28,000 miles is going to take you a little time for sure.
Yeah, a little bit.
So Zach, let's get to the why. I mean, why is it deemed so important to get broadband to rural areas?
Oh, there are so many answers to that question. It's hard to know where to begin. If you look at Oregon, for example, we have members of our coalition from education to health care to agriculture to small business. Agriculture is a very important one. That's where you have folks like the Oregon Grange and the Cattlemen's Association who partnered with us along with the Farm Bureau. And it's because if you are a farmer in today's market, you are struggling. Average farm income is down 52% over the last 5 years. Barriers overseas are rising to our exports. Markets are shrinking. And to stay competitive, you have to squeeze maximum yields out of your land and get the best price you can on equipment and for your product. And the way to do that is with precision agriculture, the soil sensors so you can use just the right amount of fertilizer or irrigation, internet connectivity to access suppliers and customers around the world, drones to monitor your crops and know just when to plant and look at your soil. These are all tools that are very common today, increasingly so over the last decade or so. But in order to take advantage of them, you need to have high-speed internet access. And for millions of farmers across the country, that's just not an option still, because they are, by nature of their business, out in places where there is not a high population density and not a lot of internet companies coming out of the woodwork to pay for cable or other connectivity.
Christopher Tamarin, how has the state of Oregon been able to help push broadband to rural areas?
Well, broadband access has been a public policy, an issue in Oregon for over 20 years. And again, as you've indicated, it's emerged as the global platform for communication, for business, for government, for education, for healthcare, energy management, for information storage and distribution, public safety, and entertainment, which is why it's important for all of the state, again, not just the urban areas. It's grown from use by less than 1% of the world's population in 1995 when it was commercialized to now use by over 40% of the world's population, over 3.4 billion users. That's going to increase to over 50% of the world's population by 2020. Oregon has had a series of focus groups, task forces, councils looking at the issue. We currently have a governor-appointed Broadband Advisory Council. That's kind of the statewide forum for discussion of broadband issues. This year, our department, Business Development Department, has a rural broadband capacity pilot program. This is a program to assist with planning for and development of broadband projects targeting rural and underserved populations. Oregon cities, counties, ports, tribes, cooperatives, nonprofits, public-private partnerships submitted proposals. We received over 25 applications with requests for more than $4.8 million in funding. The grants awarded are going to support broadband planning and infrastructure projects in Baker, Columbia, Coos, Curry, Douglas, Morrow, Kearney, and Tillamook counties. This is a pilot program. We only have $500,000 there, but it's been, I think, effective in showing the level of interest and need and demand in rural areas of the state to address the broadband issue.
Is it a case where if you can get some funding, some subsidies or something for the infrastructure to get built, the operations end up relatively less expensive than the initial build-out?
Sustainability is an important issue as well. So there are a number of different funding models that are, you know, that can be used. There is interest in looking to government, federal government, state government, to helping to close those gaps where private sector providers have difficulty making a business case to deliver services. So we've seen the emergence of cases of municipal networks and also public-private partnerships to help produce a viable model.
We're talking about closing the digital divide here on the Jefferson Exchange, getting higher speed internet service to rural areas in the state of Oregon. Christopher Tamarin is a telecommunications strategist with the Oregon Business Development Department. We also have with us Zachary Sakanik, who's a spokesperson for the national group Connect Americans Now. You can join us at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Rebecca in rural Lane County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. This broadband can't come too soon because I live just about 18 miles out of Eugene and 8 miles out of Vinita, and I have CenturyLink DSL, and sometimes it's okay, but there's a lot of problems. I'm on my third day now without internet, and it's just endlessly frustrating for my neighbors and I. And like you said, it's perfect. Living in the country has real benefits, but the internet isn't one of them.
Okay, thanks for that, Rebecca. Thanks. So is that a fairly typical situation, Christopher, though, that even when people have service, it can be a little spotty?
I think that varies widely. Typically, the challenge is either availability or availability of speeds. The digital divide continues to exist. But the nature of it has changed over time. You know, what constitutes broadband is a moving target. 10, 12 years ago, we looked at the digital divide as areas that had perhaps a dial-up service to the internet versus those that had DSL. Back in 2008, as late as 2008, the FCC defined broadband as digital communications with at least 200 kilobits per second in one direction. Today, the FCC benchmark is 25 megabits per second down, 3 megabits per second up, and we can anticipate in the future that bar will be raised again. So broadband itself is a moving target. Service availability is an issue, and then, of course, service reliability is an issue as well.
So, Zachary Sakanik, with the benchmarks constantly being moved upward, I mean, is there a strategy to make sure that you shoot for something that may be desirable 10 years from now?
Absolutely. There's sort of a range of technologies out there. Some of them, like dial-up, you max out at less than 1 megabyte per second, really about half a megabyte or less. Fiber optic cable, you can get up to 100 megabytes per second. But as Christopher mentioned, the FCC currently sets a benchmark at about 25 megabytes per second downloading and 3 megabytes per second uploading. That's about a quarter of what you would get with fiber optic cable. And that's typically enough to take advantage of a lot of the opportunities we're talking about that people might take for granted if you lived in an urban community today. So that means you can have a teleconference with your rural clinic in case you need medical attention but can't afford to drive an hour and a half to take time away from your farm to do that. It means a student can watch a documentary, turn in assignments, and get ready for a career in the 21st century. It means a small business can reach customers around the world. So right now, that's the goalpost that we're trying to get everyone up to, that particular standard. And then, of course, as new technologies come out and new offerings are made online, the demand for connectivity is only going to go up. And that's why it's so important that we not limit ourselves to one kind of technology, that we create a digital ecosystem where people are competing against each other to offer better service to customers at the lowest rate possible, so that folks like Rebecca don't have to worry about if their internet goes out, maybe they have a wireless connection available to them in those circumstances. that's one of the things we're focused on at Connect Americans Now, is really to expand the conversation and talk about technologies like the television white spaces, vacant TV channels that can be used to send high-speed internet into homes and businesses and rural clinics in places where a wired connection isn't feasible or isn't economical.
So, yeah, I want to ask you about TV white spaces. So basically you're using channels that are not used by TV stations in the area?
Absolutely. There's a lot of folks will remember back in 2009, the government was handing out coupons for these set-top boxes if you had an old TV. And that was because all the broadcasters were transitioning from the old analog signals to new digital signals that could carry a lot of information on fewer channels, essentially, fewer frequencies at least. And ever since then, we've had an increase in the number of vacant TV channels available, especially in rural communities where there's typically less broadcasters than you'd see in a city. And we could be using those vacant channels today to offer high-speed internet in rural places where a wired connection might not make as much sense, or just to help an internet service provider cover that last mile where there might be a geographical barrier like a river or a protected forest.
Zachary Sakanik is with Connect Americans Now, a coalition of groups working to get faster broadband to rural areas. Christopher Tamron is a telecommunications strategist with the Oregon Business Development Department. Christopher, Zachary was just talking about healthcare, education, agriculture. Small business is often mentioned as one of the major reasons for trying to get faster internet speeds to rural areas. Can you think of examples of small businesses that have been able to locate in rural areas because of faster internet in Oregon?
Broadband has become essential service, you know, for businesses of any size that want to be traded sector businesses, that want to be competitive and effectively interact with their suppliers and customers. You know, in 2016, there were $1.9 trillion in global e-commerce transactions. That's expected to grow to over $4 trillion by 2020. The internet is the platform in which the world works. Local, you know, Main Street businesses in small towns compete with, you know, the Amazon.coms and internet retailers. And to be competitive, you know, again, they need to be online. They need to develop an e-commerce strategy to survive long run. And there are, you know, small businesses across the state that have established, you know, a web presence, an e-commerce strategy, and serve customers outside their local trading areas, serve customers nationwide and internationally.
Did the and I noticed that, you know, we've been talking about the data centers that have been built in the Prineville area in recent years for Facebook and the like. Are those there in part because of the fact that there is broadband in the Prineville area?
They are there because Oregon has a robust telecommunications backbone infrastructure. They could not be there without it. And Oregon has a very strong and growing sector of data centers with marquee names like Apple and Facebook and Google and Amazon locating here for multiple reasons, one of which is a robust telecommunications infrastructure. Another is low, relatively low power costs. And the fact that the state does not have a sales tax is another factor, because these data centers need to refresh their equipment every 3 to 5 years, which is can be tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. So the fact that we don't have a sales tax makes us an attractive location.
Zachary Sakanik, I noticed that Connect Americans Now recently praised Oregon legislators working the chair of the FCC. And we're talking about Oregon state legislators, not members of Congress. What were they asking for from Ajit Pai?
Well, you know, what Christopher said is absolutely right. There are a number of leaders in Oregon who are dedicated to rural broadband, because it's a state that truly understands both sides of the spectrum, from, you know, making sure that rural communities are taken care of to attracting high-tech businesses and making sure that college students can come home and maybe be an app creator or a graphic designer, and they need the internet to do that. And there are a lot of folks, 57 members of the state legislature, legislature, sorry, that just sent a letter to the FCC urging him to lift restrictions that are prohibiting us from using those television white spaces we talked about earlier in order to allow internet service providers in these rural communities to take advantage of those empty TV channels and get internet connectivity out into those rural communities, cover that last mile, and start connecting some homes and businesses that otherwise wouldn't have access to high-speed internet. We've gotten similar support from the Western Governors Association, which includes Governor Brown. We've gotten similar support on broadband writ large from Senators Wyden and Merkley and Greg Walden, of course. He's chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee. These are all members who have recognized that rural broadband has to be a priority if we're going to bring our homes and businesses and schools and libraries into the 21st century. But the big challenge right now, aside, of course, from funding, which is, you know, a perennial challenge for lawmakers, but the is making sure that we have a regulatory certainty on the public airwaves so that we can make use of those empty frequencies and start delivering services that customers maybe didn't need 30, 40, 50 years ago when television providers had exclusive domain over those frequencies to today, where, you know, the thing that customers want more than anything is high-speed internet.
Right, so and TV white space is a major part of the effort, clearly. All right, we have to end the conversation here, and we've got a much better understanding now of the efforts to extend broadband to rural areas, in Oregon in particular. Zachary Sakanik is a spokesperson for Connect Americans Now. Christopher Tamarin, telecommunications strategist at the Oregon Business Development Department. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.